Hello, Dream Team. Welcome along to the good, the bad and the rugby. And I think it's fair to say we have got a fairly special show for you this week. The Rugby World Cup is up and running. And as a result, we have managed to, we have managed to line up an interview with the patrons of the WRU, the RFU and the SRU. To Mike, they are the in-laws. To the rest of us, they are the Prince and Princess of Wales and the Princess Royal. Deep breaths, please. Let's try not to get this wrong. Come on.
By the way.
Yeah.
Don't mess this up. Please don't.
Do I get to try a crown?
No, you do not get to.
Can I ride in a carriage?
Why would you do that?
Do I get to sit in a royal bed?
No.
Well, why am I even here?
The Prince and Princess of Wales and the Princess Royal, thank you so much for joining us on The Good, the Bad and the Rugby. It's very, very nice to see you. I hope you've summered well. I hope you're excited about all things Rugby World Cup. James and Michael alongside. We always have to, it's a bit like Ant and Dec. We have to position ourselves as the good, the bad and the rugby. And I know how much planning has gone in. So have we got the good, the bad and the rugby, or is it the good, the bad and the rugby?
Either way, you're not winning.
Same, by the way. Yeah.
Can we
appoint... I'm just older.
But perhaps the deepest love of the sport as well. Would that be fair?
It's fairly broad.
Right.
Yeah, it's very broad, actually.
Yeah.
So starting point.
It's 37 years.
You did surprise me with that, but it was an accident. So, they asked me to go and open the East Stand when it was built at about 2 weeks' notice because they'd been let down. I can't remember who by. And as it happened, the horse was lame, so I wasn't competing at the weekend.
Wow.
So I went.
Slightly
and about
doors.
A month later, they wrote and asked me if I'd like to become a patron.
Wow.
And so it was an accident. I don't know whether they're happy with that. But
so at that point, did you have a love? Was Pete playing?
Yes.
Did you have a love?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy rugby? You must have done.
I could cope with rugby, yeah.
Has the game, from where you've sort of obviously watched it for 37 years, do you like the game as it was or as it is now? Are you quite, or just happy with it in general?
No, I think it's, in some respects, I think it's changed for the worse, but there are some bits of it which are, patently the legislation has been a good idea. But it's changed partly because you've gone from amateur to professional, and that changes the attitude. Yeah. But I would argue that the fitness levels are different, much less focused on stamina than there used to be, and that actually there are too many replacements, and that makes injuries, likelihood of injuries, that much higher.
Yeah.
That's me finished. Can I go now?
Yeah. Very good.
No, you're not saying that.
You've been more concise than I've
ever been in this entire show. We're on about 200 episodes, so...
I know, obviously, so the likes of Rob Wainwright, Doddy have become late Doddy. To stay in a sport that, at the moment, it's quite hard to promote it in a positive way.
Yes.
We're going through it. Why have you loved it for that long? Why do you have those friendship with those players? And that's what I always try and sell to people who've never seen the game, is the characters and what it instills in people. Why have you loved it for that long that you still want to do it?
Well,
you know more about it than I do.
That's nonsense. But it's a long-term process, isn't it? I mean, with your family, it's a long-term process. And there are people your father's generation, your generation, and the next generation. It's a long-term process. But everything that rugby gives, I think that, I'm just taking exercise and team sports in general are a huge help. But I do think rugby offers a variety of talents in one team, and you have to look out for each other. And that's a different sort of sense of responsibility within a team structure. And they're not all the same. You can have different skills. And that's something that not many do. But, don't get me started on that.
You managed to segue perfectly
into
next question. I don't know if you're available to be replaced by Alex. This is quite a coincidence. We couldn't keep you for another 37 years.
Maybe patron of the good
rugby as well, please. I was going to ask, in terms of that sport, we know how much it can do for people, but in your opinion, kind of what are the real values that sport brings to individuals, male or female, and children?
Yeah, so I think, speaking personally for me, the team environment of sport played a big part in my life and my upbringing. I absolutely gelled and loved being in those sorts of cauldron of fear, noise, competitiveness with your mates and your team around you. And a lot of time, I made good friends from that, having never met anyone before. You come together and under a common cause and go for it. And I loved the highs and the lows and looking out for each other. And if someone got injured or if someone was feeling a bit left out, you go and make sure that they were included for the next match and whatever way you could. And everyone was trying to sort of bring their A game. It's that it's that camaraderie, that relationship building, learning to lose, which I think we've got to concentrate more on nowadays. I think people don't know how to lose well. Talking about our children particularly, I want to make sure that they understand that. I think it's really important from a young age to understand how to lose and why we lose, and then to grow from it and what you learn from that process. But also to win well and not boast and not be over complacent and arrogant about it. And so there's so many life lessons that I think help us all through life in friendship building, relationship building, workplace, whatever it is, that you gain from those early years playing in team sports.
It's interesting because you kind of talk about with children particularly, I'm always very aware. I think people have been part of a team or part of something that's bigger than themselves. Because, yeah, you know, individual sports are incredible, but I think always having that opportunity to play as a team teaches you that you can't just worry about yourself. I think that it's that's so important, as well as the mental health aspect as well. You know, if you look at most conditions, doctors or people will encourage you to go and do exercise, some form of exercise to get out there. And you know, I mean, I was saw a psychologist from the age of 17, always kind of tried to look at my mental health. And one of the most important things I always found was being around sport. That always gave me a grounding. I mean, you know, I think, would you just encourage every person to get out there and play and to perform whatever it would be?
Definitely. I think for so many reasons, yeah, play something. It doesn't have to be rugby. It can be any kind of sport. But physical exercise is so good for us, and it's always understated. The same way I hate to say it, but sleep is another thing that people haven't talked about yet, but it is absolutely crucial to our well-being and our sustainability and being able to, you know, be healthy. But I think from a sporting point of view, being able to come together, fight adversity together, you know, win and lose, cold and wet, damp, whatever kind of days you're playing in, get a few knocks, bruises, it's an important part of growing up.
I don't know if I'm allowed to disagree, but the bit about the wet and windy bit, I generally, as a child, I was 100%. If I never had to play in the rain or the mud, and I could play in an indoor stadium with a roof on, I would have done that. Yeah. Kids now, you see, if we made rugby a summer sport, you see little kids running out with their tiny little legs, little shorts, fall into a puddle. I'm like, no way.
Their Under Armour skins on that are way too big,
way
and they're like baggy trousers.
Yeah.
I remember when I played for Minch, and I played in a team in Bristol, and it was hammering down with rain, and half of it was waterlogged. I'm at the bottom of a ruck, semi-drowning. I'm like, I wouldn't play in the rain when I was paid to do it. What am I doing now, like when I'm really volunteered?
Yes, it's part of fun. There is that. It's a very important part.
Someone interesting, they did ask me what my favourite sort of childhood memory was about, you know, playing sport, and it was that. It was coming back in from having played hockey or netball in the freezing cold rain.
Yeah.
And thinking we are all totally mad, but it has been really great fun. And off the back of it, that sense of sort of achievement that you've come through, it's not, you know, adversity in its full sense, but actually it's been tough.
Yeah. It's applying yourself when you don't want to.
But it's also it's the endorphins, you know, whenever you achieve anything, whatever it might be, you exert yourself and go through a little bit of turmoil or a little bit of stress, you always feel better. You know, like whenever you take a conditioning challenge or you go in the rain, you know, how do you get through it? And you're freezing cold. You'll always have that moment of elation because it's biology. You know, you're going to always feel better.
Where did your... Because I'm not going to say you're uber competitive. I've seen that. I've seen her play beer pong.
Really?
coming out.
Where does that come from? Because I know your dad's a massive cricket fan, isn't he?
I suppose sports in general. And actually, if I ask both my parents, you know, who is the most competitive, I think they'd have probably like William and I. They'd sit down for quite a long time arguing who was the most competitive and who was the most sporty of the two of them. But I suppose as a family, we're just very active. And I can always remember being physical, using our bodies, whether it's walking, climbing the Lake District or Scotland, swimming from a young age. They always encouraged us to be physically active and sporty. And they always encouraged us into doing team sports and trying things. I think that's, you know, the important thing for young people
variety.
And kids today is actually being exposed to a variety.
Yeah.
Every parent knows
sports.
No.
Why don't you try this?
No.
Yeah. I mean,
We just did. I mean, well, I gave up trying to catch you, but we all played catch games, for instance, when we were this big.
Yeah.
And it developed from there. And we played a bit of badminton, we swam, and there was, well, polo, I mean, literally everything. I mean, my team sport, I'm afraid, was lacrosse. But in school time. But the other part of that is for kids who find it difficult to focus on books, sport can often be the intro to, you know, look at all the information about your sport and then lead into the education.
Find the passion and something to chase it.
Just how competitive are both of you? Because Mike, I'm not going to lie, I don't want to really say, but he has made out both of you are super, super competitive, a bit like Monica and Chandler
really
from Friends.
I'm not that competitive. I don't know where this is coming from.
If you guys play table tennis, it will go on for hours and hours, and it'll be like double or quits. Is it like that?
I don't think we've actually managed to finish a game of tennis.
No.
The two of us.
Is there a reason? Really?
The rackets are all broken.
Is that McEnroe style
ending? It becomes a mental challenge between the two of us.
Yeah, it's who can out-mental
really?
Each other. Oh, yeah.
And how much of this it goes to the kids? Are they showing signs of this competitive? I know.
Just a little bit,
I would suggest. What I think is really interesting is that they are all obviously very different temperaments. And as they're growing and trying out different sports, and it's going to be really, they're obviously still really young, it's going to be interesting to see how that grows and develops.
What about yours?
Mine's
well documented on this podcast. What were Pete and Zara like?
Pete was dreadful in terms of losing, that we had one or two discussions. He was really quite small.
I would say that my wife and I have that competitiveness about anything. If we play tennis or any, she would always want to beat me. She always talks about a sprinting career. Sorry if she watches this.
Sarah's sprinting career.
Yeah.
Was quite short.
Hurdles.
Was it?
Yeah, she was very good.
Hurdles.
Yeah, she was very good. I mean, children don't always see the point of, you know, the sports that you introduce them to. And I was, funnily enough, my trainer had her last child not interested. He wouldn't have anything to do with horses until he'd gone to college, and then he started riding. And sometimes it takes some time before they really work out what they want to do.
Also,
and that's how you have to be so careful, that you give them a spread of things to do.
Yeah. But also, isn't it the particular coach you have at a particular time makes a huge difference?
Everybody, I think it's true. I think all children have so many skills that they could deploy. But the person, if they meet the right person at the right time,
it creates the good memories, I think.
That's what drives them down the sport they want to follow.
I was fortunate to go back to where I went to school and meet my sort of old coach. And all I have is good memories of the three of my coaches that were basically, Gary, Trevor and John. It was just always good memories.
Yes.
So then you were...
Or you understood them.
Yeah.
And, I've always often the key is you understand the person who's doing the training.
Yeah. But for you both, was there a turning point where someone came along and really boosted your chances to go England rugby way? Or could it have been really bad and you end up with a couple of bad ones and maybe you didn't follow the path you did?
I mean, well, that's a great question. I mean,
could have been Welsh.
Yeah, I mean, story. I trialled for Wales under 18s.
You wouldn't have got into the Welsh team.
How many Welsh fans have said that? I would have won more Grand Slams if I had, but they said I wouldn't have got in the team. No, I trialled for Wales under 18s at the same time as England under 18s, and I got named in both squads, and I had to call up. Well, I spoke to my dad, and I was like, listen, there was 2 years at England, only 1 year at Wales, and I had to call up the Welsh guy and say, listen up, I'm so sorry, I'm gone for England. He was like, I don't understand that. What do you mean? You're more Welsh than anyone. And I was like, no, I'm not. He goes, no, come on, your family's from Upper Tumber, mate. And I was like, no, I actually can't. And now my name's Mud, and that's why they all hate me in Wales.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, but no, I could have done that. But my journey in sport was
that
kind
is
of
a tricky decision.
It was because I would have won more Grand Slams. Warren Gatland was the coach, and Sean Evans was the coach.
You didn't know that then.
Yeah. They didn't know that then, but yeah, but you know, it was
tricky
kind of
a decision anyway at the time.
And they're both amazing nations, but The coaches for me, I think, at school was I never wanted to be a rugby player, but I got into it as kind of a path of excellence. And then once I got failure initially at kind of age like 15, I got knocked back. I saw it as an opportunity to come back and work harder because I hadn't put the work in, I hadn't done what I needed to, and taught me commitment. And that's what set me up on the journey. Well, I think you were probably a bit more of a natural talent.
No, it's very similar. You know, I was uber competitive, having an older brother 3.5 years older than me. I was always chasing him. And always trying to compete at his level. And then I never really achieved anything until my last year at school. I always could play county, but never made the next step. And it built a real chip on my shoulder because I thought I was better than these guys I was playing at school. You know, you play against the guys at school and everything. And then it was coach, really, Jeff Woppett, who coached Bradford Grammar School, who were our local rivals. He was also England coach. So he'd seen me play for years against Bradford. And he kept me hanging around, gave me an opportunity. And because I was so angry at not getting ever further, I was what you call chief gnaws at training. So if they weren't going to pick me, I was going to either hurt someone at training or I was going to go and prove to them that I was good enough.
Get him off the leg.
So Alex Sanderson was the number eight in the North. And every time we'd be practicing him picking up number eight and I'd be trying to belt him. So I was kind of, and Jeff was a tough Northern nonna. He just loved it. So he kept me around, got me a game for either the Midlands or the Southwest. Scored a couple in that on England trial off the back of that. And then had a really bad 5 minutes, but he kept me around again. And then Tom May went on a study leave and I got two games and then he never got back in. Yeah. So it was...
But
it was
did you only ever play rugby, then?
I would say an athletics was the only other thing I was good at.
What do you do in athletics?
High jump.
Did you? Shut up. You can't lie to people on a... this is not right.
1 meter 87.
All right, calm down. All right, God.
No, wait, was that just tall you?
Yeah. I had a North England try.
How tall
I forgot
are you?
To go. Cause
I'm 6'3", yeah.
Whatever that translates as.
Yeah. Zero spring.
No. I was thinking in terms of height of what you jumped.
Yeah.
So,
it'd be just below my height.
Yeah, just below me, it would be slightly.
Which is unbelievable. I tried to jump like 1 meter 20 the other day when Mia was doing sports.
I've seen you trip up the stairs, which I didn't think was possible, but you did.
Yeah, it doesn't quite work there. Yeah.
Would you mind if I asked you about your sporting success and where it came from, the drive that you had, how you look back on it now, going to the Olympics, gold?
Well, I grew up riding, which helped, I suppose. So it seemed like the obvious choice. But it's. Quite often it's more than luck than good judgment to find the right animal at the right time. Then that gets you started or it doesn't. And it's the same with children. If they get a miserable pony that keeps dumping and they don't go on, if you get the right pony, absolutely they're away.
Yeah.
And to come up with a horse that was bred actually to play polo, but grew and turned into an international three-day mental horse was quite surprising.
And how do you look back now on the success of Peter? I think it was under 16 and under 18 for Scotland. What were you like as a sort of a touchline mum in those days?
I was brilliant.
Right. Silly question. That's Peter.
I left him entirely. Was injured. Yes.
Yeah. Well, funnily enough, his housemaster said exactly that to me. I think we were playing in Edinburgh. I can't remember who they're playing in, one of the schools there. And there was a sort of, over the far side, there was a bit of a crunch and he'd gone onto the floor and Ben said, can't believe you're not running over there. I said, it'd be ridiculous. And I said, anyway, if I got there, he'd hurl abuse at me. He said, I'm going to stay here. Thank you very much. And the same with Zara. I mean, I'd done it. People were kind enough to let me take part in what was then, still is, I suppose, quite a dangerous sport.
Yeah.
I'm not going to turn around and say, no, am I? That would be really silly.
Yeah. And so Zara, obviously winning silver at the Olympics. Do you go on an emotional journey watching her do what she does? Do you leave it to the end and...
When people say, do you enjoy what you do? Only the end do you actually enjoy looking at. So, no, not much. There's so too many things that can go wrong. No, I think I'm pretty good.
We were sat next to each other, weren't we, in Arkin?
Yes, well, we were standing.
When the bell went.
We were standing in the entrance she couldn't hear the bell, that was...
And I honestly say, I get excited, nervous. I never get, like, nervous. But when it's someone else...
Yeah.
And you've heard the bell, and she hasn't heard the bell, and then everyone else has heard the bell, and the person who needed to hear the bell hasn't, and everyone's going...
The group in the entrance were all yelling, the bell's gone! Across the room. And she hadn't heard it because they were still clapping the previous rider, who was a German.
Would you debrief, with my mum, however I played, whatever I did, she said I was amazing because she had absolutely no taste and obviously rose tinted glass. My dad was very much a bit more scathing, but my mum was just very sweet, but she didn't really know what she was looking at. Having been there and done that, did it make it easier to kind of have a conversation, or did you steer away from that, or were you able to give some constructive sort of,
feedback? After a certain stage, I mean, I did all the early bit, so I did all the horse box driving until she finally got her HGV licence, and then when she got good enough and her father started to... No, that's not quite true. But it did go on from there, because that's what he does professionally, and I'd just done the early bit. So after that, if I made a comment, I was usually told I was a dinosaur. I have no idea what I was talking about.
The only time I've ever cried watching sport was when Zara won. I think it was the European Championship.
Well, that was incredible.
I was down in Exmoor, I think, at the time.
I can remember.
Camping, yeah.
You came back and you said, I've never been.
We were all
so
hustled around the phone watching it.
Yeah.
And she was there, she was blubbing away, the flag was going up. Yeah. And I was just like, fires in pieces. Yeah, I was so proud.
We're
it was
in
like,
and that's the thing what sport can do. It makes you entirely kind of, sensible.
Yeah. The Tyndall Towers, if you go into the, well, obviously, you guys have been the bar. Then there's just a stack of medals and rosettes everywhere, like 50 deep.
And then
at the back, there's some dusty old gold World Cup winners medal.
Relegation.
Yeah. Smoking the bottle.
Yeah.
There's a Parker Penn shield there.
but what it leads on to very nicely is obviously you have front row seats to some of the most amazing sporting events. London 2012 would be interesting off the back of the Olympics. I mean, as a coming together and a nation and an event, how do you remember that?
Oh, it's phenomenal. And I think Chris Hoy... at the Velodrome was one of my most all-time favourite moments. We were both there, and shouting and yelling as Chris and the team went around and more and more medals came along, and it got more and more exciting. Bear in mind, that was the first time I think the British public got into cycling in such a big way.
In the velodrome.
Yeah, and it was the cauldron of noise, and it was just so exciting watching the sport, and that was a truly spine-tingling moment. Yeah. But I think also from that moment, what I've noticed is the Paralympics particularly, that was a huge moment for disability sport taking off, and it's obviously got bigger and bigger since then. But 2012 was a turning point when everyone watched the Paralympics. Everyone went, oh my goodness, this is what everyone can do, and they should have more opportunities, and this is fantastic. And so that was a big turning point I've noticed since that moment.
Yeah. Do you find it quite hard to retain the face of professionalism and sort of neutrality, I suppose, if you are watching Wimbledon, whoever it might be? Do you have to concentrate quite hard on...
Yeah, sort of right into the throat,
yes.
That lies in those emotions.
Actually, you're sitting next to him, isn't it?
Yeah, yes.
No, it is really challenging, but watching sport live is like no other. You know, watching it on telly is very exciting, but watching it live, I think, to soak up the atmosphere is extraordinary. And actually, off the back of 2012, I was absolutely gutted to have missed Andy Murray's game.
Yes.
When he won his gold medal against Federer. That's one of the highlights for me, sort of watching at home, going, I wish I was there in person, because those moments are extraordinary to be part of. And as a spectator, you get sort of drawn into the highs of that winning team or the winning individual. But it is hard, particularly when Wales and England are playing against each other.
Yes. Wales England is not an easy match.
Can you watch that together, or do you have separate televisions in separate rooms and sort of hear down the corridor?
We'll just run in and go, and then run back.
Text message.
Exactly.
There's a certain amount of bravado that goes on around the Wales England game, depending on who's winning.
We've never been, I don't think I've ever been as excited about a Rugby World Cup in terms of what he can deliver in France. Mm. Looking good. Even though you're in a horrible group.
I don't do huge amounts of optimism in anything. I tend to assume the worst. If you're around horses for any length of time, you don't do optimism. You just do hope it's all right on the day. But when it comes to people like Fiji, I mean, actually one of the nicest things I have ever done was being able to give Fiji the first gold medal for Rugby Sevens in Rio, which was a real pleasure, I have to say. I mean, it's just made such a good impact.
You've been around that Scottish team. You've ridden the waves and seen the plateaus as well. Do you think this is the best Scottish team that there's been when you've been watching?
Well, you mean
the post
Grand Slam teams?
Which
is probably very hard to judge difference, because they're quite a long way apart.
Yeah.
But that was they were very good in that period. But our big shortage is sheer people. Actually, the Rugby World Cup analysis has quite some interesting points to make about the membership, so registered members of players in each country, which was actually fascinating.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it says there's only 44,000 registered players in Scotland. That's tiny. That makes, compared to lots of other people. That's the challenge. And so, I like visiting rugby clubs and trying to keep their focus.
It'd be interesting because if Scotland do really well, it will define Scottish rugby since probably the Hastings era. I mean, like Gavin Hastings for me, I grew up watching Scottish rugby then and going, they're a good team. But you're right, maybe this is a better team.
Philly Calder's and John Jeffries and
Gary Armstrong.
Well, I have to say Gary Armstrong would be one of my all-time favourites. He was quite extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, the places he went to and came out of with the ball were just extraordinary.
I got capped in 2000 and I remember numerous times you coming to watch England play at that point. Was rugby always still a part of your early on in your life, or did you glory sport when you saw it was going well in that early 2000 period? Did you jump on the bandwagon?
So once I got to know you, I moved away.
You went to Wales.
You drove me out of English rugby. But no, I love rugby. You know, I played at school. I loved it. And
what position
did you? So I started. Yeah, I started on the wing.
Oh, I see. Sorry.
Let's start another argument. Yeah,
you said you weren't a petty.
This is the same amount of editing. That was just a question. Yeah, the answer.
I'm trying to be polite, so I'll hold back.
Right.
What I say. But yeah, I played rugby at school and loved it, and went from being, I was classic, like how school really started, thinking I was quite fast. Yeah. Slowly got slower and slower.
He is
and
fast.
Moved in.
He is fast.
And then ended up second row.
Oh, you so, did?
Yeah. I was.
Well, this,
I'm not
these
anymore.
Clarifications, this is quite quick. We did a show with Zara, and you said that you've had races before. Is there an official 100-metre time that you'd like to share with the viewers?
It's,
are we sub 14?
We're about, you know, 9.
So.
Of course not. Now we know it's a black.
My
100-metre time is nothing to boast about. I'm nowhere quick compared to these guys. Nowhere near quick. Yeah. But when I was younger,
have you
school,
not seen this place? Tim's was like a milk float, and I was like that wardrobe from Beauty and the Beast.
We've had a not classed as a race before. I always have that panic, like if it's sports day and you have a dad's race or whatever, because you know that someone's going to want to take you down.
And
we've had a race before, and I had to dig deep.
Did you?
I had to make it look like I wasn't digging deep.
Right.
But surely does not someone just step out of somewhere and do a beating, just go...
Trip me up.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Exactly, yeah. Just someone just opens the thing and says, come on, do you want to just...
But there's lots of schools who banned, like, parents... races because it's become
too expensive.
Yeah. It's been would you take part if you're given a chance?
Yeah, definitely. Actually,
we have trained for a year.
We have done. We were told categorically there was no parents' race.
Right.
But then they called the last minute parents' race. And
you weren't
maybe
prepared.
The competitive side in both of us were like, we have to take part in this. So I had to do it barefoot.
Was it like Spider-Man? Did you go, we're so unprepared, and then you both disappeared between phone boxes and came out in proper gear? Just opened a handbag with some brand new tracks, perfect running spikes. I'm so underprepared.
I didn't know what you were talking about.
Did you win? Who won? Did anyone do well?
You can
I came second. But again, it started off like Mike was just saying. I started off just running, going, joining in. And I looked around and realised I was quite far out in front. This guy was an Italian dad, was in front. I was like, I'm going to catch him.
Right.
So then I started going, and I had a friend of mine trying to catch up with me. He pulled a hamstring and laid out next to me, and it just went.
And no one's seen that Italian guy ever since, has
he? He kept running.
And then I ran in bare feet in the same race.
Yeah. How'd you get on?
I wasn't in the front.
But you did really well. You did well.
My worst was in terms of athletics. Well, apart from running around the square at Balmoral. I was really good at that because I did corners really well.
You were quite quick.
But
the look you had on your face is quite terrifying.
The top trump card, the speed 5, corners 10.
Yes.
Brazilians 12. Doesn't give up.
My worst was gymkhanas when I started to take Peter to gymkhanas. Oh, God, the pain. Because that was sprinting.
Yeah.
It was also absolutely hysterical because I tried to get him to do things, you know, more or less the right order. Tried to help him. The other parents, the pair of us were lying down at the end of the course, howling with mirth the behaviour of some of these parents.
Yeah,
one of them whipped his child off and literally threw it over the finish line.
Some of the parents were used to be actually dragging the child behind. The child's given up, she's been dragged along the floor. What are you doing?
That'd be me.
That's like the sack race at Bremer.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen it?
It's
absolutely hysterical, but occasionally the parent comes along beside it, picks it up, drags it along.
Amazing. Can I ask you about having to give the Calcutta Cup, that sacred trophy of England, Scotland, to your son-in-law? He tells a very funny story about taking a lot of time to rise to the stairs at Twickenham, and I just wonder what the opposite
kissed
side of
every
that story
baby
is.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was deliberate. Then I think a lot less
I tore my ankle ligament.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
He told you he was deliberate. He said, honestly, he relished. I spoke to every single person, to every hand, waved. Yeah.
I'll put it this way. There are a lot of people I'd just as soon not have given it to, so that was okay.
Yeah. Did you enjoy watching him play? Did you follow his career?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, because it's like, you know, within any team, if you know somebody who's playing in it, it tends to, you know, you watch more.
Yeah.
And that doesn't matter whose side they're on.
But you also keep an eye on Gloucester very closely.
I try and keep
an
eye on Gloucester, yeah.
So then just playing there for nine years all the time whilst I was with Zara. So we had that debrief.
Yes,
to explain why we lost again.
Yes. Why did you lose another final?
As I say, obviously, you both pages of rugby, but there's so many other different sports out there. Do any of you have kind of a burning passion for stuff that you like elsewhere that you might not mention to people? You know what I mean? I know you're a big football fan. You forced your children to support Aston Villa, which I'm not sure.
Not all of them.
Where does that come from? What is the Villa connection?
So it's the first FA Cup game I went to a long time ago. And I had family friends who are big Villa fans. So they took me to these matches when I was younger and got me involved. And at the time when I was going out, I thought, you know, this is great. I love it. I never really got into football that much. Yeah. As I've got older, I'm now addicted to it. I mean, I think the rise of the smartphone particularly, and when Villa actually got relegated from the Premiership, kicked off just a deep-rooted passion of, I think I was missing the team sports in my life, playing it. And so this is kind of, it helps replace it a little bit.
Right.
What about you football? What about you? Is there something else that you...
I love all sport. I really generally love all sports. You know, I love swimming. Personally, I love swimming.
Cold swimming as
cold
well.
Cold swimming. Love...
The colder the better.
The colder the better.
Really?
I absolutely love
Wim
it.
Hot
stuff. Yeah. Slightly. Yeah. Point when I'm crazy and it's dark and it's raining and I'll go and seek out cold water.
You can spend a time in it, no problem.
I love it. I wouldn't want to be put through my paces with a freezing sub-zero ice bath.
So quite like going, when we all get together, because she'll make me do something that I know I can't... And then Catherine gets...
You're going to have to do
right,
it.
Right, yeah. Got to get it.
So
like the rough race or anything like that? Or?
Swimming, actually just being sort of part on the water, but tennis, obviously I love playing tennis. We've recently got into playing a bit of paddle, which is obviously new.
Yeah. That's the biggest growing sport in the world.
Paddle tennis.
Oh, paddle tennis.
It's great fun.
You mean even I could do that?
Definitely, yeah.
But team
you'd be
sports.
Very good at it.
Yeah. Team sports, less so, I think.
Yeah, it gets more difficult, doesn't it?
It really does, and I don't think, you know, it's really great seeing some of the, you know, the girls playing these great sort of team sports now, like rugby and football weren't school sports when I was growing up. So it's really great that, you know, kids and Charlotte's playing both the sports now. And it's really good to see youngsters, particularly girls, playing these types of sports now and cricket. And hopefully they're the sorts of team sports you can play after school.
For all your roles as patrons, I think you're the only one who has trained with a professional team.
And gone up in an amazing...
And look remarkably kind of proficient, relative certainly to how you used to
look. You jumped better. In a career that spanned 19 and a half seasons, you did one jump that's better than anything I did that entire time. Honestly,
he's not joking either.
Yeah,
I rang the lads like, give me something. Yeah. I'm gonna see her. I would love some little bits of where I can have a little dig because I know she's competitive. And they're like, no. She's really actually pretty good.
They're really kind. That's so good.
But I didn't tell you that, though, obviously.
When that comes through on the to-do list, today you'll be jumping in a line-out. Is that like, great, okay, signed off on this? Or are you let's give it a go?
No, I really do. But I would love to get involved, sort of playing it and getting the opportunity to play and muck in whatever the sport. I would definitely give it a go, even if it's something I haven't tried before, because... Yeah. It's really fun, and I think that's one of the best things about sport is it's fun, and I think it brings a sense of enjoyment to life for everybody, whether you're watching it or playing it.
Formula One come under your headline of different sports?
Yeah.
Yes.
That was an off. No, because I've driven one.
How was that?
How did you get on?
Oh, we did three circuits. Or at least I did three circuits of the club circuit at Silverstone. And I think my only claim to fame is that I didn't stall it.
Wow. Good. Very good driver, actually.
That is quite impressive.
Oh. You are a very good driver. So is your daughter.
What are you after?
Nothing. No, but that is, you've always loved driving. You drive everywhere.
We did go-karts.
I've sat in that Stuart racing car. Yeah, you'd look horrendous,
I had trouble getting into Francois Sever's seat.
I was like this.
I look like Bowser from Mario Kart. No one would get round me, but I wouldn't go very fast.
You've got to get into the seat. You're quite small.
And then because your legs sit above as well.
Trying to find a helmet to fit on my massive cowlick as well would not work.
You said a very interesting thing, which is that occasionally you have to pop in and see the teams. And I'm fascinated, if we can, just to sort of peel that back a little bit. They're amazing images, like the Lionesses winning the Euros. And that was obviously... Did you vote for Jill Scott and the jungle?
I didn't vote on anyone.
You didn't vote? Oh, okay. You stayed neutral.
I stayed neutral.
Occasionally you get thrown into an England changing room in the aftermath of an England-Wales game. Is that a in and out, hello, everybody, lovely to see you, well played and out? Or is there a sort of nice to, you know, well played, tell me how it went?
I find it, personally, I do find it quite intimidating because, you know, it's not a sort of natural environment to turn up into. But I do, however, I love seeing behind the scenes of any organisation. Yeah. And I think it is, you really appreciate how many people come together. You know, you watch the game, it's the performance of those on the pitch. But actually to appreciate and see and meet all the people that got that team to the place they are, and is I think, you know, one of the most inspiring things, actually. And speaking to, you know, all the different coaches, the physios, all the trainers, and, you know, all the staff behind the scenes.
Yeah, I think for all three of you, it's also learning a bit more about the characters behind it, because I think that's the best, one of the best things sports bring out is the variety of backgrounds, yeah, characters. And you might meet someone who you never think would have come from where he's come from to achieve what he's achieved. And I think that's the beauty of sport. You can never assume it's going to be from a well-off background, or it's going to be from... It comes from everywhere. And I think that's one of the...
I've had some of the best conversations with the players after a match. Usually when they've lost, actually, you get the best conversation. When they've won, everyone's kind of on a high, and it's kind of buzzy, all, you know, great buzzing, and the music's on and things. But when they've lost, you sit down and have a chat, and have a beer with them sometimes, and you chat. It's, you get to know the team a bit more than any individual characters. How someone will take losing.
How they respond. Yeah,
and who's carrying the team sometimes. You feel the burden of the captains usually coming along, and you can just see they're carrying so much weight and they're really dejected. Yeah. And it's just then who comes along and helps him. And it's just the whole dynamic around that team I find fascinating, the psychology of it all.
Yes.
And I've had some very amusing times over the years. Some that are unrepeatable.
I was going to stitch anyone up, but kind of was the different generational between the way society has gone in terms of the way people conduct themselves now versus when you were sort of watching the game. Have you noticed when you have interactions, whether it may be more formal in back in the day or now today, it's a little bit easier?
No, I mean, oddly enough, in the early days, it was easier just to have a chat because they were...
A lot of Celtic farmers.
Well, there was a range of people out there for whom this was just what they did as an extra, but they all had lives behind that, some of which were very obvious, some of which weren't. I mean, Doddy, funnily enough, and I saw him afterwards, he started in the Pony Club and he was a really good eventer. I think he ran out of height in terms of horses.
Weight.
Right. Not so much weight, but certainly the height, because I think he tripped them up with his feet. So at some stage he was persuaded that rugby was his, you know, he ought to stick with. But so that was always gave us a slightly different approach because he had a slightly different interest level. But John Jeffries went on to chair the Morden Foundation. So it's a very farming-orientated scientific research group, which was equally fascinating because that was his background. But and I find, I suppose, horses the same thing. You learn about injuries and you learn how to try and prevent them, but you also learn how to treat them. And talking about injuries is so similar that that's quite often the route that you end up by discussing either treatments or the things that are going on, the type of injuries that people have.
Yeah. Can I ask you about Doddy? We did a theatre tour last year and actually he came to our Edinburgh show. And the reason I mention that is that we did 17 or 18 nights. The only standing ovation that we, certainly wasn't for us, was when we said, ladies and gentlemen, the great Doddy Weir is here tonight, and the whole theatre stood. His legacy will live on. But I'm just interested in how you were touched by it, how inspired you were by it, and what a friend he was.
Well, the awful thing was that I knew about motor neuron long before that, and I'd had a friend who's probably one of the longest surviving people with MND. And so for him to get it, it just, you know, you think, oh, it is indiscriminate and unreasonable. But the way he responded to that, and I have to say his whole family had been absolutely amazing. And his wife is, you know, is going to continue with that.
Yes.
But I think he has set the standard for others,
that,
you know, what it can do. I mean, MND as a disease, the average survival rate is still only 80 months. Yeah. So, you know, for him to have moved the bar conspicuously to the right in that sense was quite extraordinary. And Kevin and Ian Robb.
Yeah, Kevin Robb,
I've done a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And in fact, I mean, you come from sort of league country, but the league teams were fundamentally important to the sort of social fabric, weren't they?
Yeah, for sure. And obviously I went to a grammar school, so that's why I played rugby union. But, you know, to grow up, and I always say this about rugby league players, they're infectious. Their energy levels.
Yeah.
You think of anyone, you think of Andy Farrell, Kev Sinfield,
Sean Edwards.
Betsy, Sean Edwards. Whereas rugby players are famous for sappuccinos and always pointing out the bad things, making jokes about it.
Case in point,
else.
Right? Yeah.
Character assassination. I don't know why I bother. Don't get any arrows.
The rugby league guys are all about get off the floor. Let's go again. It's all about picking you up, picking the energy up. And I don't know whether that's mainly where it's from up north, because people are jolly up north.
And the clubs were the social centres, weren't they, as well? Because they were part of that. They didn't have community centres, they had league yeah. club centres.
And it was more of a place to go hang out. I mean, we've just done something with Jason Robinson and his the Hunslet Club, and that was just where everyone could go and hang out and not get in trouble. So that's why they all went there. And it was a multi-sport facility that he's trying to now raise more funds to allow more people to go in, because it does change people's lives. It gives them an outlet, keeps them off street corners, keeps them away from doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And that
it's a sense of belonging and a sense of family, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and I think clubs in both sports have learnt to use their stadiums more wisely. Trevor Hemming's got he has a local clinic in his, because it's easy to go. They know how to find it. And a lot of other situations, Newcastle had they built a new stand, and that had a computer sessions for youngsters who weren't, dropped out of school. So they all learned together. That's the best way to do it. Yeah. So using your facilities in a slightly different way, way more sort of society facing than they had been in the past. And I think that, making sure that you use that extraordinary capacity that particularly team sports has in engendering interest and enthusiasm is to then use the spaces that you have slightly more sort of in imaginatively.
And actually, because I'm relatively new to taking over sort of patronage at both union and league, and it's been really interesting for me learning about the differences and the sense of community and inclusion I think the league brings to its communities, I think, is really extraordinary. And one to be celebrated, I think, not just only in the rugby world, but across lots of different sports and a lot of community setups.
And that was a big complaint, wasn't it, when they shrank the league? Because they lose so much of those.
Yeah.
I actually watch more league than union these days. Yeah. Obviously on a rugby union podcast, I obviously do a watch.
Anyone who watches this podcast knows that.
I mean, the Red Roses,
so, why are you here again?
I honestly don't know. I don't know sometimes. I do know what it was. I had a wonderful cup of tea. I've taken a bit of silver.
They've learned to screw everything down.
England are obviously hosting the World Cup in 2025 for the Women's World Cup. I mean, just how excited are you about that? And obviously the opportunities for the Red Roses to hopefully win another one.
No, it's really good. And, the last, sort of World Cup and then sort of nearly getting there. You see some losing in the final. It's, they've done so well. They've been so successful. So I think they've got a really good track record to go into then sort of the next World Cup. And also I think with the football as well, I think it's sort of really energised women's sports across the board. The numbers of spectators now going to watch these games and women play at the elite level is fantastic.
60,000 at Twickenham
really
England France game.
And then more this year.
But it's also the difference in the actual audience.
Yeah.
If you go to a Six Nations game, it's a specific mainly male, mainly of a certain age.
Mainly in the barber regime.
mainly in the bar and has a prawn sandwich. When you go to watch the women's game, it's families, it's kids, it's everything you need for the sport to grow.
It was the most positive. I went and did watched England versus Ireland at Welford Road, and it was the most positive sporting environment.
Can do.
Brilliant. And now, having had a daughter, I think what I love about the fact that women's sport is now on the map on everything, with cricket as well, how well they're doing, is now there are aspirational heroes to look for.
Yes,
people always ask, when you go to rugby dinner, who is your favourite player? Who is your inspiration? It's very clear, very linear for often in men's sport. I think for women now, there are some real heroes.
You're right, because actually someone's saying to who are your sort of sporting heroes growing up? And the likes of Sally Gunnell or Steffi Graf, for example, they're individual sports.
Yeah.
And actually having for the young girls now, having sporting heroes, female sporting heroes that are part of that team environment, I think is really fantastic for girls' sport in general.
Fantastic.
And working on that basis, Dame Mary Peters.
Yes.
I mean, her impact in Northern Ireland, absolutely huge.
I remember going to the Lions tour in 2005.
Yeah. I love that. It's fantastic.
Lions games,
we watched a lot of Lions. I love the Lions. And I would love to have been there for the 1997 Lions tour. That one I feel like I really missed out on. If that was like an ultimate kind of go back and watch, I'd love to be there for
That's what made everyone fall in love even more than the Lions, because video tour, wasn't it?
It was the first, wasn't it, the first professional era time. Yes. So everyone was like, is it going to work?
Yes.
And it was such a big shift. And of course now, because the game's gone on so much professionally, it is such a challenge now to go down there and win anything with the Lions. I just find the tactics, the It's all the things we just talked about on steroids, effectively, because you're putting all that together in a short space of time to beat some of the best teams in the world. And I find that fascinating.
Fantastic. Yeah. I'm very conscious of time. So can I just finish with a quick hopes for your team at the Rugby World Cup? And any of you can start as you see fit. Should we start with the High of Scotland, who carry enormous hopes into Rugby World Cup 2023?
I just said to you that optimism is not my
strength. No, I'm just fanning the flames of optimism for them.
I think getting out of that pool would be
a huge
achievement. Anything after that might be.
I think Scotland, the schedule suits you to get out.
Shush.
Stop it.
Be optimistically negative. That's what it may or may not go well. They're very happy about it. Just as long as everyone takes part, makes it home safe.
I'm hoping, because I've said for a few years now that Scotland are one of the only teams I buy a ticket to go watch, because I think, you know, the way that Finn Russell can play, I think he can cause some problems. And you've got the hardest game at the first game and the fourth game. So you're set up to try and take one of those.
Yeah.
What about Wales? Is there a message for Warren Gatland?
Wales.
Men?
So I was reminding myself that Wales were in the semi-final in the last World Cup.
They were.
And 4 years, you think it's not long, it's a long time in rugby.
They should have won that.
I know. Yes. And actually, that was,
yes, that's true.
It was the South Africa one, wasn't it? Because they went on then to play England.
They were out.
It was brutal, And it was, when you lose so close and you think you're on the upper hand, I find it's the hope that kills my sport. Like, you think to yourself, this is it, you're going to do it, and then just the come down from that. But I think, it's been a bit of a rebuilding phase. It's not been easy. I think, everyone knows that about where Welsh rugby is. Warren is a steady pair of hands. He's done a great job for many years now. And the hope is he can start bringing in some new talent, young players. Got two young guys, effectively captain and co-captain now for Wales. So I'm quietly optimistic. It's always good you have a slightly less good build-up. That means hopefully you get out of the way and you do better in the tournament.
Game.
Yeah, it's a big first game. And Australia is going to be, one of the toughest groups in the, toughest games in the group. But Fiji, as we well know from beating England a few weeks ago, is going to be just as tough. So it shakes things up, and it's important that everyone's on their A game. So I'm excited.
And you're going to be there at the England-Argentina game.
Yes. And my hope is that one can be a strong start, because I can think building confidence up at the beginning of the tournament, I think, would be really
Win that one. We're through the group.
On we go.
Pretty much.
It will just build confidence and momentum, exactly.
And your fan base too.
We're actually on a cruise ship in Marseille. If you get bored, 4,000 rugby fans. If you fancy a drink on top deck,
I'm in Bordeaux.
Yes, of course you are. You're very welcome.
I'm hoping there's a chance to go and explore some wine.
I'm DJing at the end of
the DJ. 4,000 leave Bordeaux.
Not in Bordeaux.
We are doing 4 days on a cruise boat, a cruise ship. Someone said a ferry though. There's definitely a cruise ship, and then we're back and forth a bit, and then we're going back on the cruise, and then we're there from the
4,000 rugby fans and us on a cruise ship. I'm DJing. We're doing live shows.
Are you the anchor?
It's been an absolute privilege. Thank you so much. Enjoy the tournament wherever you're going, and thank you so much for sitting down with us today. Well, I think it's fair to say that the good, the bad, and the rugby has ended up in some fairly amazing places over the last few years, but well done the Lord, we're in at number one here today.
We always try to set an example for Rugby World Cup, so I thought I'd set the bar quite high so that we have to raise our game once we're in France.
Onwards and upwards from here. Was everyone happy?
I thought it was fantastic. I was, it's just great. I just love how competitive they all are.
A real bit of insight there. And in terms of what you're taking away from today, other than the cutlery?
I mean, it was amazing. I think, the Princess Royal's knowledge. I mean, she possesses more composure and intelligence than I could ever muster in my entire life.
The acumen.
Just amazing.
Put her in charge of World Rugby. We'll all fall in behind.
She would fix it. And also with that one look as well, everyone would just fold under pressure. I thought His Royal Highness the Prince and Princess as well, as competitiveness in their relationship and just the general nervousness while I was eating over Price's furniture was just a very exciting day.
It's been very, very special. Thank you for giving us a little look under the covers, so to speak. Good on you. It's been a very special day for us. It is now full steam ahead. France 2023. I hope you've enjoyed this show. We are the good, the bad, and the rugby, and we're a Folding Pocket production. Bye for now.